say we're going to start here at the bottom of Chaf Gimel Amud Bet. The Gemara is going to ask on the last line here, Rami the Rabbi Meir ad Rabbi Meir, Rami the Rabbonon ad Rabbonon. So we discussed before that there's a machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim with regards to the ability of an Eved and an Isha to display independent ownership. I mean, do they have the ability to acquire something independently, a woman of her husband and an Eved of his Adon, or do they not have that ability? So the Chachamim believe that in certain circumstances, the Eved and the Isha have the ability to have independent ownership, and Rabbi Meir believes that in almost all instances, whatever the Eved is Kone, his Rav is Kone, and whatever an Isha is Kona, her husband is Kona. So Gemara says, but we have a Brisa, the Tanya. Ein Isha, Podab, Maser Sheni, below Chomesh. So as a general principle of Maser Sheni, when you take off Maser Sheni, you have to bring up that produce to Yerushalayim. So many times it's difficult to bring up that produce to Yerushalayim, so the Torah permits you to redeem that produce, bring the money up to Yerushalayim, and then with the money in Yerushalayim, spend it on items and food items, as the Gemara discusses in other passages, in order to eat the Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. When you go ahead and redeem the Maaser Sheni, you have to redeem it for its full value. The Torah also prescribes that if the owner of the produce is the one who redeems it, he must add on a chomesh, one-fifth. One-fifth, according to Gemara, is a chomesh milabar, which is really the equivalent to one-quarter. I mean, he must add on 25% of the price. So when it says one-fifth, it means one-fifth of the total amount after you've taken the additional amount. So if you take a quarter and add it on, you get 125. Then that 25 is one-fifth of the total amount. So a baal or an owner must add on a chomesh. So the Brisa says, any shapoda master sheni below chomesh. The Tanakhama says that a woman must be poda master sheni. When she's poda that master sheni, she must add on a chomesh. Rabbi Meir, isha poda master sheni below chomesh, that she can redeem it without adding on the chomesh. So one wants to know, echidomi, what's the case here? Ilemi bezuze de baal umayser de baal. This is the master sheni of the husband, and it's the husband's money. Then when the woman goes and redeems the master sheni, shluchute de day. Right, the baal kavda. She is doing the bidding or the agency of the owner, which is the husband. So if she goes and takes her husband's maaser sheni and she redeems it with her husband's money, then she's just acting on behalf of her husband. Ella, so what's the other option? Bezuze dida umaiser dide. We're talking about, we'll read this first according to Rashi, that what? It's her money umaiser dide, and it's his maaser. So she's taking her money and redeeming his maaser with that money. So the Gemara says, Isha Mar Rachman, when it comes to redeeming, it says the term Ish. It says, Asher Yigael Ish, Amar Rachman Velo Isha, that the redemption can be done by a man and not a woman. What does that mean, man, not a woman? Woman is able to redeem Maaser Sheni, but when it comes to her husband's Maaser Sheni, an Isha is considered an Acher. She's considered a third party. Since she's considered a third party, she will not have to add on a Chomesh over here. So obviously everybody would agree that the woman doesn't have to add on a Chomesh. Elalav, this is again according to Rashi, Elalav, ki hai gavno, da aknila hermana. There's a case where someone else gave her a gift of a money, varmala almanat shiptifti boat a maser, on condition that you redeem the maser of your husband. And nevi ipcha shmein lahu. And we heard just the opposite from the opinions of Rabbi Meir and Chachamim. Over here it seems that Rabbi Meir says that the woman has independent ownership. When you give her this such a gift, on condition that you redeem the maser, equivalent to before, where there was a gift of money to an Eved on condition that he can redeem himself. Over there, Rabbi Meir says that the Eved cannot have an independent kinyan from his Baal. But over here, Rabbi Meir says the woman does gain independent ownership. And then when she goes to redeem the Maaser Sheni, she's considered to be a third party. And there is no Chomesh. Whereas the Chachamim by the Eved say that the Eved does gain independent ownership, and therefore he can use the money to redeem himself. Whereas over here by Maaser Sheni, they said the woman does not gain independent ownership, and when she does redeem the Maaser Sheni, it's the equivalent of the Baal being poda the Maaser Sheni, and she'll have to add on a Chomesh. So this is the exact opposite of the opinions we saw before. That's the way Rashi learns the Gemara over here. Tosus, on the other hand, here changes the Girsa, and he says that the Rabbeinu Tam doesn't understand, right, why does the Gemara over here have to mention this idea that Ish v'lo Isha? The way Rashi's Girsa reads, we also have another principle which says the Mima Asro or Chomano v'lo Maser Chaveiro, that only you give a poda a chomesh when it's your Maser, but not when it's the Maser of your friend. If it's a Maser of your friend, you do not have to add in that special chomesh. So this woman, when she has independent ownership over here, we should have said that the reason that she doesn't have to add in the chomesh is because because she's considered another party. She is it. It's not her maisrot. If it's not her maisrot, then when she gives the, or does the redemption, she won't have to add in a chumash. So therefore, Rabbeinu Tam says the fact that the Gemara went to this ish v'lo-isha, he thinks that the girsa is actually different over here. And the Gemara's girsa at this point is that it's bezuze dida u'maiser dida. It's her money and her maisrot. V'hachi perusho. And this is how we explain the Gemara. Ish amar rachmana, the mosiv chumash, al masro v'lo-isha. That a man adds on 1/5, but not a woman. Even when she's using her own money, and it's her own maister sheni, she doesn't add on a chomesh because of the word ish. That means that even an almono or a grusha, a woman who's independent of her husband, she will not add on eno mosefet chomesh. She won't add on a fifth. Meaning the addition of a fifth is only by a man. Meaning that a woman is included. When we say, the pasuk says, im go'ol yigael ish, mimasro l'rabotet isha. So go'ol yigael means that she's entitled to do ge'ulah. She's entitled to redeem the maister sheni. But it has the exclusion of ish below isha. That means that the man adds on a chomesh, but the isha does not add on a chomesh. So the woman will be allowed to redeem maaser sheni, but she will not be required to add on a chomesh. And that's the girsa according to the Rabbeinu Tam, that we're talking about her money and her masrot because of ish below isha. So now the Gemara says, well, if that's the case, that's simple, because we know that from the exclusion of ish. And the Gemara continues, Elaha, what's the case? Must be the case where she's gifted money, and that money is the question, again, of whether she has independent ownership over that money. And the question here is that when she's going to redeem it, is it her money, and therefore there's no need for chomesh, or is it her husband's money, and then there is a need for chomesh? Now, what's the solution to this problem? So the Gemara says, Amar Bai Ipuch, switch around the braisa. Right, read the braisa, we'll switch the position of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, and therefore the positions of Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim will line up. Rav Amar, the Olam Lotipuch. Don't flip the braisa here. V'hachar b'maser da'at mebei ba'asa askinan. We're dealing with Maaser Sheni that came as a Yerusha from her father. Right, so the father, her father, had Maaser Sheni. Her father passes away, and now it comes down, be Yerusha to her. Now, what's the status of Maaser Sheni? Does Maaser Sheni belong to the individual, or does it belong to Hekdesh? Well, that is, happens to be a machlokes, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Rabbi Meir, the time Meir Rabbi Meir, goes according to his own reasoning, Damar Maser Mamon Hekdeshu. Maser belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then when we eat Maaser Sheni, we are Mishulchan Kavoa Kachlin, and we are eating off the table of Hashem. Hashem gives us the Maaser Sheni to eat. But truthfully, the money belongs, or the Maaser Sheni belongs to Hashem. So therefore, V'lo Kanei Leibau. Why is that? Because when the father passes away, and there's Maaser Sheni, according to Rabbi Meir, the Maaser Sheni never belonged to her father. If it never belonged to her father, I mean it belonged to Hashem, then she never really inherits it. If she doesn't inherit it, then the husband does not inherit it. And when they go to redeem this Maaser Sheni, it's not their Maaser Sheni that they're redeeming. It belongs to the father. And if it belongs to the father, you don't have to add in a chumash. And that's the position of Rabbi Meir. Rabbanan the Tamayu. Now, Rabbanan, according to their own position, the Amri Mamon Hejo to the Maaser Sheni belongs to the individual who separates out the Maaser Sheni. So if that's the case, when her father passes away, it's like money, like other money that her father passes down. And that will be subject to the Takanas Rabbanan, where a woman who inherits property, then the kinyan, or the core of that, becomes Nichsei Malug, and you sell the property, the core of the property will belong to the woman, but any production or any payroll from that property will belong to the husband. So if that's the case over here, then the husband does have ownership in this property. If he has ownership in this Maaser Sheni, then when he goes to redeem it, he's really an owner. If he's an owner, then he's going to have to add on a chomesh. Therefore, if and then the Baal is going to inherit it because the father passes away, the woman inherits it, that goes to the husband. She's really doing the bidding or the agency of the Baal. If she's doing the agency of the Baal, then they're going to have to be mosif chomesh in this instance. So in order to settle or to reconcile, according to Rava, between the two cases, Rav Meir generally believes that a woman cannot have own independent ownership, and the Chachamim believe that a woman can have independent ownership. The issue at hand here is whether what's the status of Maaser Sheni. If Maaser Sheni, right, doesn't belong to the woman ever, then it's considered to be a third party, or the Baal's a third party, so when they inherit it, they have no relationship to their Maaser Sheni, so therefore they don't have to pay a chomesh. According to the Chachamim, where a woman's able to acquire it, and then it goes to the Baal, right, if they don't say, you know, the money is independent of ownership or not, right, that will depend, right, it will go automatically to the Baal, and therefore only if the woman has independent money will she be considered a third party. But if she doesn't have independent money, then the maestros will belong to the Baal, and it will be the equivalent of she doing the bidding or the agency of the Baal over here. So now, Tana, now we're dealing with, back to our Mishnah. In the Mishnah, we said that an Eved Kanani can be inquired in certain ways, and then he can be let free or set free in different ways. One of the things that's absent from the Mishnah, but it is a way that an Eved Kanani go free, is Tana, Yotze B'Shein Ba'ayin, B'Yoshe Avarim, She'en Chuzrim. If the Adon, the master of an Eved Kanani, damages his Eved Kanani, either by hitting his eye or his tooth or knocking out one of the 24 Evarim, which we'll see listed later, which are these 24 Evarim. If he does damage to any of these 24 Evarim, the Eved Kanani goes free. Tosa points out, why did our town of our Mishnah not mention them? Because there's a day we're going to see on the second half of today's daf that the Eved Kanani, even when he has such damage and is entitled to go free, might still require get shichra. So that's why our Tana doesn't mention them, because he believes that they still require, the Eved Kanani still requires a get shichru, and therefore these are not sufficient to allow the Eved Kanani to go free. Now Gemara says, Bishlam Hashem V'ayin K'tive. Alright, now we know that Hashem V'ayin entitles an Eved Kanani to go free, because that's explicit in the Pasuk. Now, but what about El Rosh Evarim and Alan? How do we know that other limbs, heads of these other limbs, entitle them to go forward? Gemara says, Dumya the Shein V'ayin, we'll have a Meh Matzino. Just like Shein V'ayin, Ma Shein V'ayin Mumim Shibigalui. They are visible wounds, Be'enan Chuzrim, and they are permanent. Af Kumumim Shibigalui, Be'enim Chuzrim. Any other damage that is done to the slave, and are permanent. So that will include these Rosh Evarim. Gemara says, Be'emon Havi Shein V'ayin, Kshnek Tuvim Abayim Kechad. Let us say that Shein V'ayin are two psukim. So now, if you have one pasuk that tells us a rule, then you can learn out, we can say that the Torah wrote that pasuk to teach us the rule, and then we can learn everything else out from that rule. But if the Torah goes out of its way to write two psukim, then you can't say that the Torah wrote the rule twice, right? It probably means that the Torah wrote the exceptions to the rule. There is a rule, and the Torah gave you or enumerates the exceptions to the rule. The exceptions to the rule are Shein V'ayin, not that Shein V'ayin established the rule. When you have two psukim can't establish a rule, they establish the exceptions. Gemara says, no, it's Richa. You couldn't have done it. We need Shein V'ayin. We need both psukim. If we need both psukim, then Shein V'ayin can establish the rule because each one of them teaches us something that we can learn to the others. So what is that? The Ikach Tav Rachman Shein, had the Torah just simply written about tooth, that a tooth allows that every kind of go to free, Hava Mina Afilu Shein the Chalav. I would have thought even the tooth of milk. What's the tooth of milk? That is your baby teeth. Chatov Rachmana Ayin. The Torah wrote Ayin to teach you that only damage that is permanent. Meaning that if a baby tooth gets knocked out, that's something that will be replaced by an adult tooth. So that's why the Torah wrote Ayin. V'chatov Rachmana Ayin. Had the Torah only written the word Ayin, Hava Mina Ma Ayin Shnivra Imo. Only things that he's born with, right then, Afko Shnivra Imo. That only things that he's born with. About Shane, but if it comes to a tooth he's not born with, that only grows in later. Maybe you won't go free with that. Lo, Tzricha, that's why we need Shane Vayant. So we have Shane Vayant to teach us those two different limudim. One is that it has to be something that is permanent and not replaced, so it can't be a baby tooth. And number two is it does not have to be, he does not have to be born with this item. I mean that it can even be a tooth, right? Not just an iron that he's born with, but even an adult tooth that comes later on will be sufficient to allow him to go free. Now Gemara says, Ve'ema, let us say that the Pasuk says, when it allows every Kanani to go free for knocking out his eye or his shein, it says, Kiyakeh, right, when you hit him, Klau, that's a general principle. Shein Va'ayin, then enumerate Shein Va'ayin, Prat, that gives you details. Klalu Prat, Eimba Klal Elamashe Per Prat. When it comes to a Klalu Prat, when you have a general principle laid out in the Torah, and then the Torah gives you details about it, the details are coming to define what the general principle is. So then you only have the details. So then we should say Shein V'ayin in midiachu nilo, because you have a klalo prat. The general principle is if you hit, and then the Torah enumerates what is it called hitting? Shein V'ayin. So that's the only thing should be called hitting or sufficient to allow the Eved Kanani to go free, but not other Evarim. Where it says, no, the chavshi yishochenu, that the puzzle continues, that the chavshi yishochenu, which is an additional, right, klal, chazar v'klal. So now you have a klalo prat uchlal. A klalo prat uchlal works, ki'edan elokeina prat. You have a klal, a general principle, then some details, and then another general principles. You include, or the klal comes to include everything within that category of the prat. So ma prat mefurash mum shibegalui. What are the details? Those details are enumerated. What's unique about them? One is that they are a visible mum. Number two, veinam chozrim, and number two is that they are permanent. Af will include af kol mum shibegalui veinam chozrim. So then we too will include all mumim that are visible and that are permanent. Gemara says, "Imat prat mefurash mumim shivgaluyu." But tell me, milachto, Wait a minute, right? There's an additional common factor to these two details of Shein V'ayin, which is that he's batel mimlachto. He's unable to do his work anymore. What does that mean, that he's unable to do his work? So Rashi says, batel mimlachto is ayin nismet mirot. If his eye is knocked out, then he can't see anymore. V'ashein milil os, and his shein, if he's knocked out, he can't chew anymore. So whether that's the malacha itself, meaning that he's the chewing, that was part of his work. The Gemara talks in other places about chewing being a form of processing. So maybe that was the work that he was doing. He's batel from that malacha. Or the possibility that he's unable to chew now. He's unable to eat. He's unable to do some sort of function that he had done before. Ve'eno chozer, and it's also permanent. Af komim shvuloi ve'eno chozer batel malachto. There should be this third category, this third definition to the category. So Allah matanya, but we have a brisa that says, Talash bezikano, if he pulled on his beard, medildabo etzim, and somehow it dislocated or pulled out a bone, meaning that he somehow severed a bone, evid yotzei behen lecherut, he goes out free. So if he goes out free, here, it's true it might be permanent, it's true that it's a visible wound, but it's not true that batel mimlachto, he's still able to either do the work he did before or function like he did before, so why should he go free over here? So where it says, lechavshi yishalchenu ribuyahu, the plural of Yishalchenu comes to include, or is it very inclusive? Very inclusive means that we're not going to exclude anything. So Rashi says, now we've switched from learning a klal pratu klal to a riba miya to riba. Klal pratu klal, we only include things that are categorically like the prat. We have a riba miya to riba, means we include everything. Miyat, we exclude one or two items that are very dissimilar, or specifically dissimilar to the Shein V'ayin. I don't know if you have to go as far as Rashi to say it's riba miyut, but you might say that the klal prato klal has an additional riboy of Yishalchenu, so add on additional things. And you'll have to balance between the additional things added from Yishalchenu and the things excluded from Shein V'ayin. That's what we're seeing the Gemara is going to do. So Gemara says, v'ribuyuhu afil ahikal yadov tzamta. So if you say that you have a riboy that includes everything, then say even when he gets hit on the hand and his hand shrivels up, right, or it's somehow incapacitated, this sofa lachzor, but it's not permanent, Nami, that should also work. Alama tanya, we have a braisa. He kala yadovit samta, hit him on his hand, and it somehow was incapacitated or it was shriveled up. But it's not permanent; it'll come back to its function. So when it says imkain shein v'ayin, my hanile, I mean shein v'ayin have to function some way to exclude something. So what are they going to exclude? They're going to exclude right items that are not permanent. They're going to exclude items that are not visible. But the riboy comes to include everything else. So you have certain things that are excluded, certain things that are included, and you have that balance between Shein V'ayin, which says exclude, and the Yishalchenu, which means include. So Shein V'ayin will say includes everything similar to them, which is galui and permanent, that it's visible and permanent. But Yishalchenu will include other things that might have been excluded, like batel mimlechto, that will be included by Yishalchenu. So you have the balance between those two. So now the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, we mentioned this before, Bekulam Eved Yotzei Ben Lecherut. All these Rishei Avarim entitled the Eved to go free, V'tzarech Get Shechur Divi Rabbi Shimon. Shimon says, even though he goes free, based on this, he still requires a Get Shechur to go out and be freed in order to marry a Bat Chorin. I mean, he still needs this Get Shechur. So that will be, as we mentioned before, the position of our Tana, and that's why he didn't mention these in the Mishnah. He doesn't need a Get Shechur, he goes free, and he's totally free. Rabbi Lazar Omer Tzarich, he does need to get Shechur like Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Tarfam Eino Tzarich, doesn't need it like Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Kiva Omer Tzarich, again like Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Lazar. Ach Machrim Lifnei Chachamim Omrim, the Chachrim Lifnei Chachamim say, Nirin Devei Rabbi Tarfam. So Rabbi Tarfam makes sense that you don't need to get Shechur B'Shein V'Ayin. When it comes to Shein V'Ayin, why? Torah Zachtalo. Torah writes them explicitly and it gives them entitlement to go free. V'Divei Rabbi Akiva, who says you do require a get Shechur B'Shari Verim. Other Ivarim that are included but not written explicitly, they would be why? Hov Knas Chachamim Hu. Because that is only a Knas Chachamim. It's only rabbinic in nature. It says, Knas Hu? What are you talking about, rabbinic? It's a Knas, it's a fine. Cry Hakadar Shinon. We learned that out from a pasuk. We learned that either from a Klal Pratu Chalal, Riba Miya to Riboy, a Mematzino. But we had, these are Limudim that make such a Drusha, Drusha Del Raisav. It's a Drusha Del Raisav. What are you calling it, Divrei Chachamim? Where it says, Elaholo, Umidras Chachamim Hu. But since it comes from a Drusha, it'll have a different status. So we'll continue. The Gemara will come back because this is very problematic. My time, the Rabbi Shimon. So what's the position of Rabbi Shimon? Yodiv Shiluach, Shiluach Misha. It says that he will be the Chavshi Yishalchenu. You will send him free. So Shiluach, what does it mean to go free? We'll learn that out from Vashalach by Shilach by Anisha. Well, how does a woman go free? She gets a get. So how does an Evid Kanai go free? He also needs a get. Ma'isha Bishtar, Abib Nami Bishtar. Rabbi Meir says, no, Ikatav Chavshi B'lesov Kedamart. If you wrote Chavshi at the end, it would be like you said. But Hashlichtiv b'chavshi shalchenu, first it says b'chavshi, and then it says he'll go free. Why is he shalach? Why is he going out? Because chavshi, he's already free. Why is he already free? Because he had one of the evarim knocked out. On the other hand, what? If you had learned it, it said yishalchenu chavshi. Had the shiluach been written first, then chavshi would say, how does he go free? Through shiluach. What's shiluach? Well, I have to go look and find shiluach. Where's shiluach? Shiluach ba'isha. How do you get shiluach? That means to get shichur. So Rav Meir says, no, it's out of order. Have a lady chavshi mi'ikara. So when it says, right, chavshi yishalchenu means chavshi mi'ikara. It's already, he was free before he was let go, and therefore you don't have it. Tosus asks an important question here. He says that throughout the Torah, here the Gemara calls something Midrash Chachamim, we're going to have a different din for something that's explicitly written in the Torah versus something that's learned out from a limud, right, of the principles that we know that you're allowed to darshan the Torah. How could you say such a thing, right? We have tons of limudim throughout. He says, Kama gufei Torah tluim, she'enam baim elei koch drasha. We have tons of limudim that we have that are limudim deorais, that limudim that teach us dinim deoraisa. So how can you differentiate between something that's explicit versus something that comes from a drasha? So Rabbeinu Tam, he says, rereads this Gemara, and Rabbeinu Tam, to get zeno mi derabanan. This get shichur is only a din derabanan. That he requires a get shichur is only derabanan. Why is that? Because we're afraid that the master will find this evid in the shuk, and he'll say, hey, you belong to me. Come back, you belong to me. So now, if his shein v'ayin were knocked out, then we know, everybody knows, it's written explicitly in the pasuk, everybody knows that din. That if you knock out a shein v'ayin, that the evid goes free. So there, we won't require get shichur to protect the evid. Why? Because nobody's going to believe the Baal, the Adon, when he says, that's my evid, because they'll see that he has his two-thirds eye knocked out, and they know the pasuk says he goes free. What we don't know is that people don't know the other drasha, that not only shein v'ayin, but everything, there's a midrash chachamim that includes other evarim. And since people are not aware of this other drasha chachamim, this Adon will go on the shuk, he'll see him, and he'll say, he knocked off his finger. And he'll say, cut off his finger, and he'll say, hey, come back, you're my slave. He'll say, well, you knocked off my finger. And people say, well, I don't know. When the Torah says shein v'ayin, we don't know about this other drasha. Therefore, the chachamim demanded that he gives him a get shechur in order to protect the evet. The Adon cannot reimpose his ownership over the evet. So in that instance, there will be a difference between shein v'ayin, which is explicit. The chachamim didn't have to make a din of get shechur because everybody knows that the evet's free. But other evarim, even though he isn't midoraisa entitled to go free, the chachamim said, give him a get shechur, and we demand that he gets a get shechur in order to protect him, that the Adon can't go back and take him back because other people aren't going to know, or people in general are not going to know that an evet goes free for shari v'arim. And in order to protect the evet, in order to show that the Adon can't come back and take him back, we say, give him a get shechur. That's the Rabbeinu Tam's solution. On the other hand, the Riva has a different page, which is interesting. He says, well, we learn out different items from different parts of the pasuk. Shein v'ayin are learned out in the pasuk, and it says shein v'ayin, and then it says l'chofshi yishalchenu. Shein v'ayin sends you free, and free means free. You don't need to get shechur. So they have nothing to do with the word yishalchenu. On the other hand, other evarim are learned from the word yishalchenu. Because as we said, there's a ribuy of l'chavshi yishalchenu. So wait, if you're learning the other evarim from the word yishalchenu, then you also have to learn the other evarim from the gzera shava of vishilach vishilach. Meaning that there will also, if you're learning freedom out from the word chavshi, then chavshi means go free. Free without any other strings attached. You go totally free. That's shein v'ayin. But if you learn out shari v'arim, where do you learn those out from? You learn that out word from yishalchenu. Yishalchenu, we know the word yishalchenu is defined somewhere else. By isha, it's defined as vishilach. Vishilach means go free with a get. So therefore, other evarim will require a get shechur, whereas shein v'ayin will not require a get shechur. Not because one's from a drasha and one's explicit, but because of the way they're learned. Because shein v'ayin is explicit, and it's by the word chavshi, that means free without any other strings. The other evarim learn out word shechenu, yishalchenu, is defined in other places to mean you need to get shechur. So that's how the Riva solves this problem. So you have two solutions in Tosfos to why the Gemara differentiates with what's written explicitly in the Torah versus what's a drash chachamim. The Rabbeinu Tam is because that's only a derabanan differentiation. According to Riva, it's even doraisa differentiation because of the source for how you're getting the freedom here. But either way, it shows us why this is different and not like other places in Shas where a drasha and something written explicitly are exactly the same. So now the Gemara continues. Tarabonon, he kawaleino v'sam'ah, aluzno v'chorsha, if he hits him by his eye, and he blinds him, and or he hits him by his ear, and he deafens him, evet yotzei ben l'chirut, he goes free. Negedeino, if he hits him right away from his eye, v'eino ro'ah, but then he goes blind from that, or he makes a loud noise next to his ear, and now his eino shomei is deaf, in evet yotzei ben l'chirut, he does not go free. Meaning that he has to have physical contact with the aver in order to have it allow him to go free. So Rav Shimon, the Rav Ashi, the Memra, the Kalalav Klumhu. So you're suggesting here that noise is not sufficient. Now, when he makes noise that doesn't have physical contact with the Eved, that's not sufficient to set him free. That's not considered damage. Vahatani, don't we have a, right? Don't we have a Baisa? Rami Bar Chezkel, Tarnagosho Sheet Voshoda Vir Klezuchit. You have a chicken that sticks its head into a glass utensil. Vitakabo, and he makes a loud noise in there. Vishavro, and then he broke it, right? Mishalem Nezak Shalem, he has to pay for that, meaning that the noise or the sound that the chicken made that caused the glass to shatter, you're responsible for. Vamar Yosef, Vamar Rav, Sush Tsanaf, a horse that neighed, Vachamor Shin and Ashna'ar, or a donkey that brayed, Vishivru Kalim, and they broke utensils, Vitoch Abayit in the house, Mishalmim Chatzi Nezek, they pay half Nezek. This has to do with Machlokas in Baba Kam, which will come up to about Sumchus and the Chatzi Nezek Tzroros. So they pay half and not full. But either way, you see that you are responsible for the damage that's done by the noise or the voices of these animals. So why two over here? Why aren't you responsible for the noise that you make that causes damage to your Eved? So Amalei Shani Adam, the person's different. They came into Bardat, who Iu Mivat Napshei. Because he's a Bardat, the damage is caused by the response of the individual. It's not the noise that the person's making that causes him to go deaf or blind, but rather the response of the individual hearing the noise or seeing the sudden action in front of his face that causes it. Rashi formulates it this way. He says, "V'chi mivat midatei kamivat." When he became fearful, that was of his own right doing. Shenotein libo ala pachad, because he became fearful because that's what he saw something or he heard something that made him fearful. Called ba'pitom, from the sudden sound that came there, and that's what caused the damage to his body. Not that the sound itself is what causes it; it's his reaction to the sound that causes the problem. Whereas by an animal, it's the sound itself that's doing the damage. These inanimate objects, it's obviously that the noise itself is what causes the damage. But when you're talking about a bardat, when they're talking about a human being, right, then it's the response or the reaction of the individual that causes that damage. Kidatanya, we have a similar baisa. Amavit et chavero, person who makes a sudden sound, we're going to see in a second, by his friend. Paturmi din adam, not responsible. We can't punish him. We can't hold him responsible here in Beis Din. Chaya b'dinei shamayim, but he'll be held accountable by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Kate said, what's that case? Talk about no, if he blew into his ear, v'chashon, and made him deaf, patur. Because there, again, the sound is what did it, and not him. And that's the reaction to the sound of what caused it. Achzo, if he held on to him, v'talk about no, v'chashon, chayat. But if he held on to him and then blew the sound into his ear, then he's chayat, because his holding on to him, his physical contact with him, either exacerbates the reaction or forces the person not to be able to move away or to react properly, and therefore he's held accountable in that case. Where it says, Tano Bonon, he go on, I know, v'chato. If he hit him on his eye and he caused it to dim, Alshino v'nadada, on his tooth, and he caused it to loosen or to become loose now, im yachol ishtam eishbam, if he can still use them, achshav, in eved yotze ben lecherut, the eved doesn't go free, because they're still functioning like they did before. Bimlav, if they don't hold, you can't use their original function, then eved yotze ben lecherut. Tanidach, we have an additional brisa, Arishaitai, no kuyaf, he was already dimmed vision. Visam'a, and then he caused him to go fully blind. Shino nududa, he already had a loose tooth. Vipila, and he knocked it out. Im yachol ishtamesh behen, had they been functional before, right, kvar, eved yotze ben lechirut. Then when the adon does the damage, he goes free. Vimla, vein eved yotze. If they weren't functional before, when he knocks them out, he's not really doing any damage here, and therefore, the eved doesn't go free with them. Mitzricha. We need both of these to determine what that line is. Where's the line between yes and no? Well, both the brises say the same thing, that if it's functional, it's still considered to be a good tooth and a good eye. If it's not functional, it's not a good tooth and not a good eye. So why do you need two brises to tell you that? Why? The Yashmin and Hachkamaitad, you only told me the first brise, Mishum Demikara Nahora Barrio. Originally he had a good vision, Vashanora Kechisha. Now he made him have dimmed vision. But in the second brise, Demikara Naminora Kechisha, already had dim vision, aim alone. And then when he knocks it out, let's say that that doesn't do anything over here. If you only had the second brace, I would say only when you totally blind them is it a problem. The gamri of alhatam in the first brace, though sami the gamri, since you didn't blind them totally, that's not considered to be damage. So tricha, so both brices teach us that both dimming of vision and causing full blindness, both are problematic, and again, it has to do with function. Whether the threshold of function, if it goes over the threshold of function, you've caused damage, or if it started out above the threshold of function, then you also have caused damage in both directions, both in the original damage or causing damage from that point onward. Now, Tana Rabbanan, Hayashaya Aresha Yarabo Rufe. What happens if his master was a doctor? No. So he tells his Eved, look, you have some eye ailment. Go ahead, you know, put this medicine on your eye. It'll make it better. But it ends up happening with some right? That it ended up blinding him. Lachtolo shino. Or he tells them to somehow dig out his tooth, whether this means, you know, I would thought drilling into his tooth. Rashi talks about cutting out around the position, the roots of the tooth. They pilan and fell out. Right. He can laugh at his master and he goes free because look, his master caused him to lose his tooth or his eye, and therefore the Eved goes free. That's the position of the Chachamim. Rav Shimon Omer v'shichata. That it says when you damage, it means v'shichata. What does that mean? Achi kavein l'shachta. So you have to have intent to do damage. Over here, the doctor didn't intend to do damage. He just intended that he help his Eved. It happened to be that he damaged his eye or his tooth, but that wasn't his intention. Rabban and Hai v'shichata ma'avdilei. What do they do with the word v'shachata? If he is, say it, an OBGYN, he's going in to birth his maidservant's baby. And he ends up blinding the Uber inside. Patur. In that case, he's Patur, and he doesn't go free based on that. My time with Amarkav Shechata. The puzzle says Shechata. Yes, they have intent to do damage. So now, Be'idach, and what is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? How has he learned that out? He learns it out. Mishachat Shechata. That he says, one says v'shachat, one says v'shachat, it could have said v'shachat, since it says v'shachata, then nafka, he learns out both limudim, v'idach shach shachata lo darish, the chachamim don't think that it works both ways. So what's the difference between the chachamim and Rabbi Elazar? Both of them require kavanah over here. Well, the difference is like this, the chachamim require that you have kavanah for the aver, meaning that you must have intent to be working with his shein or his ayin. Therefore, in the case of this shifcha, where he had no intention, and now he was trying to do good, he was trying to birth the baby, had no intention for Shane Vayan, then we don't hold him accountable for Shane Vayan. Whereas, in the case of the doctor, he was intending to deal with the Shane Vayan. He was dealing with his eye in his tooth, but he was trying to do the good, but nevertheless, he was dealing with that. That will hold him accountable. Rabbi Elazar says, no, we won't hold him accountable for either. Kavana means two things. One, kavana means you have to have kavana for Shane Vayan. You have to have kavana to be dealing with this Aver. And number two is you have to have negative intent. You have to do it to damage. And therefore, in both instances, the Eved will not go free, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So now, last case here, Amar Sheshes. If he was already blind, v'chatato, and the Adon gouges out the eye. I mean, he was blind, now he gouges it out. Is that additional damage enough to send him free? Rabbi Sheshes said, Eved Yotzeba and the Cherut, he goes free. My time, well, why is that? Because actually now he's done more a significantly different damage, which is that he's now missing a limb. And how do I know that missing a limb is different than having a mum, than having damage that is, for instance, being blind? Tani Tuna, we have a brace that says, Tamut v'zichrut be'behema. There's a requirement when one brings a korban to Hashem that the behemot are, first of all, complete and have no mumim. That you're not allowed to bring a behemot with a mum on it. But that is true only by behemoth, by an animal. But it is not true, ain't tamut v'zichrut be'ofot. That is not a requirement by ofot, by birds. By birds, you don't require it to be a male. And number two is you do not require it to be whole. I mean that birds with mumim are fine to be brought on the mizbeach. But despite this fact, yochol yobsha gafa, if its wing had totally dried out, nikta araglor, its leg was missing, nachtata ina, which is what we're after, its eye was gouged out, I would have thought you could have brought that. If you don't have, there's no requirement of mumim, I could have thought I could bring any of these things. Tamalor min ha'of, but lo kol ha'of. Right, that he has to bring, not all ofot are ra'oi to go on the mizbeach. What's the difference? Well, a mum is okay to bring on the mizbeach. Mechus or aver, if you're missing an entire limb, that's significant or so significant that we won't allow you to bring that even by ofot. So what do you see? You see, even though that by ofot, mum is not a problem, nevertheless, when you gouge out the eye, that's sufficient, right, to be considered mechus or aver, to be another step, to be a damage or significant about negative item regarding around the bird or negativity surrounding the bird that you can't bring it as a karban, so too by the Eved. Even though he's blind already, he has a mum, but when you gouge out the eye, that's an additional level of damage of mechusar eber, and he will go free for that. Amar Chir Ba'ashi Amar Rav Huda Haita Lo Yeteret. If he has extra limbs, for instance, he had six fingers or six toes, v'chotcho, and you cut it off, Eved Yotzei Ben Lechirut. Since you cut off one of the limbs, these are one of the 24 Iberim, fingers and toes. If you cut them off, then he will go free. That's only if it's in line with the hand, meaning, or in line with the foot. Meaning if the sixth finger is counted or looks in line with the other five fingers, then it looks normal, and then when he cuts it off, he's done damage. Whereas if the other finger is sticking out from somewhere else on his hand, that's already an oddity, it's already a mum, and when he cuts that off, he's not doing additional damage. So it's only when he cuts it off in the perspective of it being a quote-unquote normal, which is that it's in the line of the hand of the fingers and the line of the toes, then it will be considered a enough of a damage to let him go free. Otherwise, that won't be considered a mum to set him free. Okay, we'll stop over here.